Smira se bomo nekaj posnela, tebe moraš biti tiho, veš?
Mami reči, da jaz ti dam naloge.
Ja, Ivan makes homeworks.
Homework, Ivan?
Yeah, mm-hmm. For school.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
But aren't you on holidays? No.
Mm-mm. He has school, and he would have school in Germany, so
yeah, right.
He has a lot of tasks to do. So every Excellent. Day he's making some, but it's great.
He isn't yeah. something to do.
Ni treba zapreti. Če te ne motimo, če pa hočeš, pa lahko tudi.
Do you know about this podcast? There's a podcast in New York by Oklahoma Theater
yeah.
called OK Radio. Mm-hmm. Similar to this, where it's just a discussion about
super
what's going on and what you're interested in. No, not what you're interested, what you're like wrestling with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'll put this here for you.
<The best. laughs>
And this here for me.
Mm-hmm.
Test. Okay. Do you want to welcome?
Just you open and then...
Okay, I'll open. Mm. I will say, do you want to say your name for everybody?
Yes, hello, my name is Bojana and I'm here in the middle of nature in Australia.
Yes, excellent. At the Bundanon Artist in Residency.
Yes, a fantastic complex.
With the many animals.
Mm-hmm.
So what I always ask to open, and then we just have the discussion,
mm-hmm.
is what are you busy with?
At the moment or like generally?
Yeah. Yeah, I would say the thing that like you, the thing that is your work that you're working on and mm-hmm. with and wrestling with, but you also have to live with it.
Mm-hmm. What I'm busy with at the moment, it's a lot with different kinds of writing.
Yeah.
And teaching, so that's the combination. And I do a lot of, I am completing the book, and on the other side, I am really teaching a lot at the university and also outside. So that's the, that's the occupation of my life at the moment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And is there a, like a concept or an idea that is? I don't know, that is with you all the time, that is haunting you, or some, like, your book that you're writing about?
I think it's really my book.
Yeah.
It's actually like that actually this is the idea which I was working with a lot in the last 5 years. I was really interested in the relation between dance and politics, especially in generally art and capitalism, and how do we address the questions. And... this is a field with which I was working a lot, and the book is the result of that field, and also the other text. But now I would like to shift a little bit the questions also. So
mm-hmm.
what I'm busy with now is on one side to conclude a period in my life and to actually open up new questions outside of it. So I'm really searching for a new perspective through which I can work with these questions further. Like, for example, there were a lot of discussions in the air about precarity, about the similarity between artistic work and capitalist modes of subjectivity.
Mm.
And this is now quite a discussed issue. And I have a feeling that when the issue becomes very general and popular, then we are all critical about it, but it's not anymore pushing our thoughts into unknown fields, like that you have to articulate these thoughts also in a different way. So that's a kind of thing I would like to do now, and I would like to really now open other questions concerning, connecting to that. Hmm.
Does that mean then if you're ready to wrap up
mm-hmm.
this, does that mean that you have another one that's in the future?
Yes.
That
yes, I would be really interested in the issue of time.
Uh-huh.
So I was dealing also a lot with the temporal modes of production in the contemporary art in this book. So there is a last chapter. And now I'm really interested to go deeper into the question of temporality. So how the temporality is not only how the temporality is also economically and aesthetically defined for us, and what is the temporality of our living today with a constant acceleration and multitasking and so on. And that would be one issue I would like to follow. And another issue which I am very much interested also is, what is the role of movement? This is a very general question, but what is the role of movement in the contemporary world? So we were celebrating movement a lot, like capitalism celebrated movement for its own sake, globalization, nomadism, and so on.
And output.
And output, and so on. And I'm now very much interested in the sense, like, is there, because there is a kind of exploitation of movement as a productive force. And I would be very much interesting, are there other potentialities of movement which are not exploited yet or which can open something interesting? And that would be the question I would like to follow. And on some level, it is connected also with the temporality, no? With the, like, the, I was researching in the last text, like, the notion of duration and what would be the resistance of duration that you are not constantly subjugated to the constant acceleration, changing of subjectivities, but that you are actually in duration, that there is a kind of persistence, because this makes also contemporary modes of economy very nervous.
Because do you think that we can go back, or we will have to go forward and break through? And then there is something that no one is even considering yet.
Yeah, I think it's the second version. To have to hold back. Of course, we are always going back in some way because the things we did, they are never completed, and there is always a potential in them how to do them differently. But I think that we are really in a kind of a shift that we still don't know how to think about our modes to go forward, but we would all like to break through and go forward, but we don't have a means. And there are philosophers who are actually having a little bit the opposite. Now there is a movement very strong in philosophy. There was also a conference in Berlin where they talked that we should accelerate even more, so that it's not to actually go to the other temporal modes, but actually accelerate, be even faster than the capitalism is, and this will then explode, and maybe we will have something new. But I don't know. I think I'm not so sure if this is the way, because this is for me quite a catastrophic scenario.
Yeah. Well, there's even you made me think about a Star Trek episode in this space flight, and they were trialing whether they could go faster than warp 10 or something, and they did. But what it triggered was not that the organisms that went that fast could just move that fast, but that it moved over into starting to evolve the biostructures of the organisms. So as soon as, like, you have a physical structure, and then as soon as you push that physical structure too far, it's also transformed.
But that's a kind of the big discussion, I think, also in philosophy, which was not so much my topic in the last years, but it's kind of interesting, like, how much do we also shift these political questions, which were always question of our culture, cultural questions of the way, how do we use language, communicate, collaborate, actually to biological and natural questions, and the question of transformation and modification of human beings. That maybe we are in a period of time where, because we are also changing the nature so much with our works and working and so on, that maybe we are also have to think, like, what is this transformation on a biological, natural field? And this is also one topic which is coming now to art very much. Of course, then what is interesting here for me is, again, the question of temporality. So that this temporality does not become a temporality of a single life, because this is how we are actually seeing the temporality, experiencing. But what it would be if we would start to think about our own position in the world and our own practices in a temporality which is endless, or which is... which is unimaginable still, how long it will take, because that brings totally another responsibility also, no?
Yeah, well then, this is a conflict I often have when you have an idea and someone says, oh, you've got to sell that, you've got to trademark it and sell it. And then the conflict I have is that the consideration about then what legacy that leaves, and that all you really do when you have a great idea and then make lots of money from it is that you're taking something and using it as a convincing tool for somebody else to give you money. All it is I somehow convince you to give me your money.
Yeah.
And for that process to happen, I have to mine these oils and make these plastics, and then you have to then drop these plastics in the ocean, or just for me to convince you to give me money. And maybe I can convince you to give me money for something that doesn't cost everybody else something.
Exactly, because it's also very, this exchange, what we do with each other, it has really one temporal logic, and this is the temporal logic of the present. No?
Yeah.
So we don't do exchange for the future anymore. No. It's interesting if you think about generations who were really obsessed with the future at the beginning of 20th century, with utopia and so on. They did a lot of exchange between each other, and a lot of collaboration was because of the future. The problem was, of course, that this future was always a kind of very ideological, a communist future or even a capitalist future and so on. And I think we have now the problem that we don't have any utopia in front of us. So, but at the same time, we need the future. We need the promise to the future. We just cannot live in the present anymore. No? The present is really, it's kind of, okay, maybe we can go past. We can still go a little bit past for some generations. And even that is shrinking down. No? It's really... Yeah. Life is the question of individual life. No?
Yeah.
It's
well, it used to, I don't know how it is everywhere, but you used to have 3 and 4 generations living, not only living at the same time, because people's children were born when they were younger. So they were 4 and 5 generations could be alive at the same time, but living in the same house or within the same zone.
Yes. Yeah.
And maybe it is a connection with history that gives us a future.
Also.
And we are shunning our history.
It's true. It's a kind of, it's total stress on the individualization and being in the present and actually shutting out the past and the future as they would not exist.
Yeah. It's good for the economy.
Yes, exactly. Even if the economy itself is obsessed with speculation about the future, that's why it's so much collapse. You know, that's kind of paradox, no?
Yeah.
It is pushing you in a constant presence, but what are the financial markets doing? They are living from they are eating the future. They are constantly speculating, no? Yeah. And it's actually, that's interesting that we see the future only in the way of how the financial market is seeing it, as a possibility of gain or loss, as a kind of field with which you can speculate, and maybe not something as something which you cannot predict, but at the same time you have to share with other people that you can survive, but you cannot predict it. You don't know what will come. No? You never know what will come, but that does not mean that you still don't work towards it, no? That it will come. It's kind of interesting. No? So there is a French philosopher who is saying that the future is monstrous arrivé, that it's a monstrous becoming. No? It's kind of, it's a factor of unknown. No? And this is, that's the economy. It's really, I don't know. So these are a little bit the questions I am dealing with. And of course, then this is very much connected to art.
Yeah, and movement.
How do you move?
Because there's also a lot of the economy, which was a coin. I read this the other day on this podcast. It was called Planet Money. It was only a term that was coined in the 30s, in the 1930s. And before that, there was no even idea. And now it's become our God. And you sacrifice everything. To keep the economy happy. But I forgot what I was going to say.
The movement. You said something about the movement.
Yeah, okay. So if the economy is so often run speculatively and through only the mindset of tangible profits and by old static white men mm-hmm. sedentary white man, then how do you bring the value of movement to it that isn't just assembly line movement or isn't just the shipment of products movement?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How is
That's the
biology. Where is the biology?
Yeah, the biology is also maybe in that the biology also is not always developing in a functional way, but the biology prospers because there are so many dysfunctions in evolutions, and yeah. This is something what we are living in a very simple understanding also of the human evolution and progress, the fittest, the survival of the fittest, and so on, mm-hmm. which is absolutely mm-hmm. not the way how mm-hmm. the biology works. There is a constant variation of organisms. The organisms have possibility to constantly change, to constantly mm-hmm. produce
and,
variations.
And develop relationships.
And develop relationship and develop, and this
with
is something,
other
yeah, yeah.
Species and yeah, environments.
Yeah,
and
yeah. And this is something what we, and I think here it's interesting to think about the movement, that movement is not only, that movement is ontological or kind of force by itself. It's not only, it's not only in the service of an effect, and that movement by itself, it's producing change.
Yeah.
It's not in the service of change, but there is no movement without continuous change. It's and that I think is something very, very interesting. And there in the, also if you see how much there are so many tendencies to spatialize movement, to calculate it, to structure it, to make it more functional, but actually it's really the force of how the things are. Because
but functional for what?
Yeah.
What end?
Yes.
What function?
Yeah. Yeah. The function is only in economy. No?
Yeah.
The function is, as you said, the movement, the shipment of things, logistic movement, the shipment of people, and so on. But we see now that this is actually a kind of illusion because it is a movement only for a specific people. And I don't know, a lot of people in that world, I don't know, 3/4 are in stasis. They are not allowed to move.
No? Because it doesn't profit the people who are supplying service.
Yeah, no?
But then we... there's so much focus on being economic and so little focus on being effective as well.
Yeah, it's also it's not only that. It's I think it's more the focus on being economic is also kind of there is also a kind of change in the way that we understand economy. We don't question economy. We don't question the knowledge of economy anymore. So we took it for granted. Like if you think how crisis is regulated. And then there are constantly people coming and saying, now you have to spend less money, now you have to be the measures of austerity and so on. So we don't question these measures anymore. We take it for granted that it should be so. But who said that this is the knowledge which is actually valuable? Because it's the knowledge which is only the knowledge which is returning back the value to the banks and to the financial systems. Now, but it's actually not returning the value back to the life, to the way how do we live together. And this is very, very interesting how this is very fastly accepted that the whole generation, because the countries are in a bad state, economic state, so the whole generation has to be sacrificed that they will be better. But better in what?
Yeah.
No? In what that means? Like, well, better in that there would be more money for rich people, I think. No? That's the...
Yeah.
It's...
I was... thinking, you know, that there's a huge new development right next to Central in Sydney called Central Park, and there's going to be thousands of people living there once all the apartments are built, and there's a small park and there's a shopping centre, and part of it has artist space as well. But I had the thought the other day that it might be, and not that it condones it, but that might be one of the positive outcomes of large pools of money coming under the decision and influence of one person or a very small group of people is that huge things like that can happen. But then are they good, are they bad? I don't know. But that you couldn't do that if everybody was equal.
Yeah, I understand, yeah.
And then maybe cities can only exist, the huge high-rise buildings can only exist because... because of that. I don't know, just thinking about it. But okay, can we maybe then have some interesting thoughts for me about legacy?
Mm-hmm.
What's your relationship with your legacy? What you're going to leave behind? Because I make music, but it's not a physical form anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was for a little while, but like it wasn't for ages, and then it was for a little while, and now it is no longer a physical
mm-hmm.
form.
Mm-hmm.
And dance, but you write books.
Maybe, but also these books, I'm not making myself
immortal.
Immortal, and also blind that these books will last forever, because I also feel that I write books from the questions which are now.
Yeah,
and right. I don't know, maybe they will stay, maybe they will be in 20 years absolutely not interesting, 30 years anymore. So
because we've solved the question? No.
I think it's really, we cannot predict that. No?
No.
It's funny that you're asking me that on my birthday.
Yeah.
It's a bit dangerous. No, but it's, I don't know. I don't think so much about that. In that sense, I also live very much in the present, no?
Mm.
That I don't think about what I will leave behind, because it's very, very difficult. I think more about than about my child and about my work.
Mm.
Still, not so much the work, no? What I leave behind, maybe, and that I like, is this what I did with so many people in Europe or around the world. So I was working with so many artists, and I'm always so happy when I see how they develop and work. I don't know.
Mm.
Because I'm also teaching so much, and that's maybe the legacy. Yeah.
Yeah.
That there are really young people who develop and they work on their artistic practice, and this I feel that it gives me a lot of satisfaction also, like in the question of legacy. No? But that's also not a long past. No? It's just, yeah. But I know what you mean, because I also had a question now when we moved and I'm not living anymore in the country where I was living. And then suddenly you come into the country where you don't have any past.
Mm.
No? It's just new things. And I had big problems, like to think, like, what is my past here? So how do I relate? And now I have a kind of two countries in which I have, still past, which is very rich,
mm.
and I still collaborate a lot with the people, but I have a feeling that this collaboration is all dedicated to the past and not to the future, because I'm not anymore in contact with them. And I have another country where I'm much more now, and working with people in the moment. No? And that's kind of funny. So, and yeah, but I think, yeah, with text, some will stay. But there is also huge production today of theory and text and so on. So,
do you think that the consumption of those things can keep up with the production of them?
No, that's the problem. Yeah.
Because I remember, when it was during the Industrial Revolution and they had to really push this individuality and that you express yourself through the things you purchase. Because a lot of people had a very real fear to them at the time that it was possible to overproduce.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because there's only so much that people need. And that's why they had to develop the idea that it's not about need.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's about want. Mm-hmm. But then, so I'm curious, like, if things that you're writing don't get read.
Mm-hmm. I have a kind of a lucky situation in life that I was always writing for publications which were part of a specific part of communities,
yes.
So artistic communities,
yeah.
And I know that they are read because they were the communities were reading these publications and using them, and this is also, you can also see that the texts were translated. Now they are translated in different languages, mm-hmm. and so on, and that means that there is a need to be read. But there are a lot of texts. I know there is a lot of production and magazines and so on, because also if you work at the university, you have to publish. And then there are like publications existing which don't have a lot of readers. No? So that's true. But I was always working through a little bit more. I start actually to write through community and not by myself, and that's quite good, no? And not for the academia or something like that, no? So I think that that this is okay. But that's also the way I think you should write maybe about art.
Yeah, within there is a community.
Yes, within a community and within a kind of... it has to be a kind of affirmation of a specific field, no? Mm-hmm. And not just writing for writing's sake or because you would like to do one text in a nice academic way, but then nobody will read it. No? So I think there should be need for text. There should be need for reading, and then you respond. And this is the way how maybe the texts are existing. No?
Yeah, I'm thinking now about making, when you make with other people,
mm-hmm.
some part of a collective of contemporary makers, I guess, and mm-hmm. before, or still concurrently, but for many years now I've been part of a breakdance crew,
mm-hmm.
and that is a collective, mm-hmm. like any other, mm-hmm. and you make within yourself, and you make for the community.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And... But there's a constant push away from that within funding structures that they want you to make for everybody, from an individual esoteric genius for the entire world.
Exactly, which is totally, it's exactly, and that's the biggest problem. And that's something, if it's possible, we should really resist it. Mm. But it's the market, no? It's really the idea of the market, no?
Yeah.
And you are always in the individual position. So you are the artist, your ideas, my concepts, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Which is... and I see now also how this changed, like the way how my work changed as a dramaturg, as I started really to work within the community, and then I was more and more asked to come, to visit, and so on. Eh? Like what I'm doing now, so I'm not part of the community here, but it's a kind of, I'm bringing some expertise, eh? Which is a kind of abstract expertise. What is that? Eh? And I think this is something like, I think it's really, really important to somehow establish modes how to develop a community in which you work and live. And because there is such a push on individuality and competition also then, like how to share the practices and how to actually be aware that also individual ideas are like biological variations. No? They are not something new. No?
Mm. Of course. They all come from and they will go towards.
That's their
function.
Yes, that's their function. They are not like breakthrough, new breakthrough and so on. That's never is. Of course, after that, we put some works on the piedestal and say this is a cutting work and so on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that's kind of canonization of our own history and so on. But that's something else. Yeah.
It's being ignorant to the development stage of the cutting work, which is this. You have this phrase called second album syndrome. A band will come out with their first album and it is incredible.
And then
they'll have to make a second one within a year or 2 years, but they've just taken their entire lives to make the first one.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, and I think this is something like I don't know. It's if there are some communities and then they develop formats, how to build... Because it's not that the community will think about the same thing, no? They can be very individual people inside.
Yeah.
But they can be develop these modes of support, modes of sharing, the intellectual ideas, the knowledge, the ideas about art and so on.
The speculation.
The speculation, exactly. Yeah. The reading, the interest, because why should you always be in your own room and read and, you know, everything developed by yourself?
There's a b-boy in Australia called Morganix, and he was talking about the shift that's happened in the last 5 to 10 years with beatboxing, and that there you used to get together, like breakdancers still have to get together, and you would practice how to do your beatboxing, but now there are kids that have learnt it from videos by themselves and developed this incredible technique and style and genre, but they are not with any community, and so the practice of it and the engagement of it somehow, it often, I think that the thing that you do is actually the side effect of being with other people.
Exactly. I would agree, because I know that very well. when I moved from Slovenia to Germany, and I felt so lost, exactly because I didn't know what do I do.
Mm.
Because it was, my work was so informed by the other people with whom I was living and working together in Ljubljana.
Mm.
And I really needed a year to reshift and to find the people so that I can say, aha, there is a reason that I'm here, because I can react on their ideas, I can exchange and so on. And it's not a question of being isolated and so on and being lonely or so on. It's really this that I formulated my theoretical question from the collaboration with others.
Mm.
No, they didn't come by themselves, you know, like... But there is always a collaboration with others. And I think that in art especially, we formulate a lot of questions exactly because of that. We are with others. No?
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, there are now other ways also how to be with others. Maybe these kids are learning from YouTube and then sharing on YouTube. You know, it's a kind of...
Yeah, but it's like,
but
it's like practicing how to kiss, but by yourself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's very... No?
It's like,
yeah,
yeah. What yeah. are you actually learning?
Yeah, yeah. So it's kind of... It's there is a very nice work of Nathalie Bokin on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
She did a mass ornament. That's a kind of a book from the 30s from Krakow, where he was analyzing Tiller girls. These were these American dancing
like
girls, yeah, which came to Berlin. And then he said that they are like an embodiment of American capitalism, because they all do the same, no? Like, and you know, like tick-tack, like Fordism. But then she said developed a kind of a way to find the videos on YouTube where the people were dancing on specific videos, like Shakira, very popular dances.
Mm-hmm.
And then she put all these videos together, so mm-hmm. as they would be simultaneously,
mm-hmm.
no? And you have a kind of a new social choreography of today. So it's not Fordism, where still Tiller girls are in the same time and in the same space.
Mm.
But it's a kind of post-Fordistic situation where people are isolated in their own rooms,
yeah.
but still doing the
but
same.
But they still do the same.
Yes, exactly. They still
yeah.
do. Everybody's doing the same.
Yeah.
So, that's the. And this is this false idea of individuality, nah? That you are actually... your own genius, you have your own ideas, but actually you're doing the same as everybody else.
Yeah,
no?
yeah.
And that's...
And even if you do something that someone one day calls genius, it is probably because you weren't good at doing the same.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
you were trying
yes,
to do the same.
Yes, but it was not good. It didn't
that's
succeed.
It. Yeah.
Actually, you failed.
You failed at doing the same.
But that you cannot plan. So.
Yeah, and then it's just fashion about whether someone thinks it's inspiring or depressing.
Yeah. So
what's the most exciting possibility? Like, if let us talk about this
mm-hmm.
thing that we need to, this future that we need to go towards, because if we need a future.
Mm-hmm. The most exciting possibility for me would be that people would really start to developing other modes of how to relate to each other, to other social modes of living together.
Yes.
And I don't mean these 60s communes and so on, because that's kind of strange, but that they would really develop the other different economies of living. Nah?
Yeah.
Because economy originally comes from a household. Nah? So it has nothing to do with taking care about the household, no? Taking care about your own house and so on. And I think that would be the way how to maybe a little bit shift this ruthless, egoistic capitalism in which we are living.
The ruthless.
Yeah. Because it's like now it's so concentrated on one. No?
Yeah, well,
and
even less than on one, because with one, then you at least have responsibility.
Yeah, and here
isn't... But if you are temporarily acting on behalf of a corporation or an organization or a body that you can set somehow within your lack of empathy, you can separate your actions from responsibility of, like, your actions under the banner of the company, or you can separate that from who you are, not politically, but on your spiritual standing, then you can just come in and do really good work without judging, and by good I mean like do really effective work, mm-hmm. without judging the impact it's going to have, because actually the effectiveness is just how effective you can be at screwing the last bit of profit out of yeah. everything and everyone. Yeah. It's yeah. not about and the lure is that those things are so much easier to measure. And since the coining of the term economy and GDP and wanting to know how much things are worth, people really get seduced by numbers.
Of course, totally, yeah. And you just you just go through your life as calculation, and you are counting yeah. your debts yeah. and your assets, yeah. and but we totally lost the knowledge how to share, how to live with each other, how to develop other. Yeah. This is very basic, like, I don't know, to what are now my friends doing in one city in Slovenia where I was living as a child. They really developed these parallel ways of building up apartments where they share the investment. And, you know, it's another way which would then push this real estate boom a little bit away and give people affordable apartments. So there are community apartments. No? And it has nothing to do with communism or with collectivity, but with another economic modes. Like, how do you actually think about economy, which is economy of sharing and not just exploiting and making more profit and so on.
But it's a separatist education, not education, like the mode that you're talking about, where there are these people, men or women or young or old, it doesn't matter, but there are these people who within their job they excuse ruthlessness.
Yeah.
But then all of the profit that comes to them from that ruthlessness, they can often be endlessly generous with to their family or to their friends or even to strangers. But somehow they can step into this ruthless, like this role where ruthless is validated.
Yeah, like you have the very good example of Bill Gates. Who is ruthless, no? In the way how he developed Microsoft.
And how he owned things and patented things.
And how he gives money back. But that's a kind of very nice book of Slovenian philosopher Slavoj Žižek, who is actually trying to say the problem of contemporary capitalism is exactly in these personalities who then gives, who they are giving back the money in a humanitarian cause. Because there is a kind of a perverse joy of capitalists who has so much money. He's more rich than the state and so on, that then he can even play this kind of humanitarian god to the people. And I don't know, he's giving a lot of money away from malaria. Of course, this money is used, I think, in a very good way and so on. But it again shows the disbalance, that you need an excessive richness to give something what should be given without that, anyway. So this excessive richness has to be first created, but that's of course nothing new. That was already in the time of the kings and so on. It was the same.
But it seems so easily forgotten that the richness comes from high profit margins, which comes from not paying people, sharing in the work.
Exactly. That for
got you there.
From working, from developing the computer industry, not paying people, from monopolizing all the intellectual knowledge, which is not just his, but it's from everybody who was working there, and that's so on and so on. And that's the, and this is a kind of, and I think this would be my wish or kind of something. I was even thinking, maybe now I'm in a kind of situation where I'm really having a job and I teach and I'm at university and I'm so much connected also to the students. But that would be something I would like to do in the maybe in 5 years, to be more activist also in that kind of other economic organizations and maybe collaborate with people and establish some forums and so on. So that would be the wish.
Do you think that it's something that just that no one knows yet? Modes that you're talking about, or do you think it will end up?
People know them, but the people are very afraid of changes.
Yeah,
that's the, because I know, like, there were a lot of movements last year in Slovenia from where I'm from, and there were demonstrations and people were on the street and they demand different ways of operating an economy. But then when there were concrete initiatives started with the people, like what to do, and not a lot of people is participating. It's a kind of fear now of losing what you have, of changes. But maybe, I don't know, maybe that's for that the time is needed also. No? And maybe. I hope it's not that we are not in that sense that the radical poverty is needed, that the people can change. No? But there are also some other theories. No? But I think, I hope not. No?
Maybe it's just generational.
Maybe, and I think so.
The bad ideas don't get replaced with the good ideas.
Yeah, I think we should trust into young generation because it has because it also has totally different experience with the effects of capitalism that we had. Like I had an experience to have a good life. No?
Yeah.
And a lot of people of my generation, they are not critical because they got a lot of things out of it. No?
Yeah.
And the young generation actually sees that that's a bubble, no? Which exploded after 10 years or 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have a good life. They don't have jobs. They are absolutely, they know that there is no future in front of them, like in the sense that they would get a job and so on. And I think they go somewhere else or they start to organize themselves and develop living for themselves. And that's really coming from young generations, no? This support, no? Because they really, they don't have a lot of chance, no? And for us, we were not thinking about it. Like for us, everything was open.
Yeah, no? I was thinking today how much time I would be able to spend on, say, making a dance or even having this conversation with you if somebody else wasn't making my food, that I could just go and give some money to.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's also, we as artists should not be blind that we are also part of that system, that actually our nice life here, it's because there is this money returning. No? But that does not mean that we should not be critical, I think. No? Because I think there can be nice life, but there can be also less egoism. So this is not connected. No? That you have to be totally ruthless and egoistic, that then some people can have nice life. No, it's not true. No?
There's a theory that a population will always grow to the amount of food that is available until it over consumes that amount of food, and then it will have to shrink to the amount of food that is available. But if everybody, the whole world, ends up with enough food, then will we just keep growing? Like, can we self-manage, or are we always... Is that just going to lead us to planet colonization?
I think, yeah. I think we'll go somewhere else. Or we will... I think we are also not... Maybe we also have so... Oh, we think that we are the only one. Maybe we are not, and that's also kind of... I don't know. There is this the in geology they call this period in which we are living now Anthropocene. No, so there was a how do you say this in English? Geocene, like a geographic where the earth was formed and stones and rivers and rah-rah. And now we are living in an Anthropocene period where the human is the one who is transforming, the shaping land. Yeah. But maybe there will be another. Period coming. So if you really think in these long temporalities, no?
It's scary to think that we, because my whole growing up has been that we are at the top of the food chain.
I know.
And I don't think that a lot of people relinquish that very easily, even if it's for the better.
I don't know. Of course, we cannot go out of our humanistic position, no? That we are, that's very, very difficult. No?
Yeah.
But if we just look how our lives are developed and how we are actually depending from other biological systems, then we see that we are absolutely not on the top. No? It's actually, there are a lot of other biological systems which are defining who we are and how we develop and so on, so... Like bacteria, for example, no? There is such a paranoia now, no? That there will be new and new and we will not... It's kind of...
So these things are really interesting. And then I wonder about how you can dance about them. Like, I think I often think maybe I could do something that was more effective, but I have the need to dance as some people have the need to play music, or some people have the need to, like, to be thinking about these things through my biology, and to be in touch with my corporal reality when I am thinking about all these things. But it's hard to keep reminding yourself that it matters, or that there's not something more effective you could be doing. Or, like, I guess I don't need validation, because I'm going to do it anyway. I don't know. You just wonder I wonder about these things, and if I'm just hoping somebody else will solve them, or if I'm being active in solving them by not buying into them.
I don't know. This is a difficult question. I have no idea. I think it's kind of, it's also a kind of, for me, it's always dance or like movement. It's also kind of very, very interesting force, because it's actually so strange form, natural form, that the body is dancing. Okay, it's coming from natural mating and so on, but actually, if you,
even from
actually,
if I ever feel breath, really, what's that word, like, conceited in my movement, stop everything, what can I not stop?
The breath. So the movement is, and you also think we are sitting now, but actually we are moving with a very fast speed, not to fall down, so from the force of gravity and so on. So the movement is really a force of life. And that's actually something, I think, very different, very interesting to think when you are busy with dance. And of course, the movement will never represent the problems we are dealing with, but maybe that's open up also other possibilities, how we can move. Why are we maybe not now so much interesting into virtuosic movement and the kind of, but maybe to other forms of movement, is because it's not so much the focus only on the human possibility, but there are also others, like what is the movement of materials, or what happens with my movement if I interact with another material, and so on. These are, my students are now very obsessed with that. So with this materialism, like monsters, materials, connection between the body and nature, the movement of neurons, and it's kind of interesting to explore.
But there's also, I'm in the zone now where I'm making and being the one that will perform. But there are other commissions I have this year where I'm not the one that will perform, and I can just make. And there seems like there's two things that are always happening, and it's the need of the body to do whatever move it needs to do, or to see how far it can push itself, or its understanding of, and that's from everything from circus to BMX racing to like, you just, the body needs to know its limits and test it and understand it and live through that. But then the maker or the choreographer or the sculptor or the curator wants it to do something to a viewer. And I wonder how much those things have to do with each other.
You mean like the need of the body and what you would like to do for the audience?
Yeah, and like, is the ultimate power in any performance to engage empathy?
Yeah.
Or is there another ultimate power?
There is. There are different approaches. Like, you have, there were a lot of people writing about movement and empathy, especially when the contemporary dance started in the 20th century. So, like, there were writers who really had problems with how to understand new forms, like Martha Graham, for them was very abstract at that time, and so on. And then they developed this idea of kinetic empathy, that actually the kinetic empathy is the force through which we can observe movement and so on. The problem of kinetic empathy is that that it kind of generalizing the way how do we look and attend, that it's a universalistic concept. So there is a kind of transferal of energetic force of the body to the energetic force of the audience and so on.
Yeah, and maybe we get that just as well when we see someone singing and they exactly. sing to the point that they cry, exactly. you see the shudder.
Exactly.
And so why point, do we yeah. even need the dance then?
Yeah,
is but that just but for
dance
the body?
Is dance is actually something I think it's not only working for the body, it's working really also for the mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because also thinking is in one way dancing. Thinking is movement.
Mm.
It's nothing else than movement.
Mm.
That's a French philosopher Deleuze who did a lot of writing on that, like how thinking and movement are connected, or Masumi. And it's really true. How the idea appears is through movement, not through... Yeah. It's not static, you know, and that's something connected to that. And I think the dance is working on all these layers. It's not only on kinetic embodied way, but it can also be even transferal of knowledge or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's on every... Yeah. So now there is... it's maybe better to talk about different modes of attention, that there is a kind of complexity of attention when you watch dance.
Mm.
And that's quite interesting. No? A possibility of abstraction also, that you don't always connect the body to the signification.
Yeah.
No? That's
yeah.
such a freedom. No?
Yeah.
Or possibility of being just in the rhythm, or I don't know.
Yeah.
Because the bodies are so much framed in language and disciplinized.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that's something what still needs to be done a lot. And actually... You see also that how dance wants to then be disciplinized and connect back to the language, you know, like ballet or... Nah?
Yeah.
So the dance has constantly to liberate itself, nah? to
yeah.
to not to be yeah. what the dance is supposed to be. Nah?
Yeah, but
in
then there's
sense,
the watching in which you are static and
mm-hmm.
you watch,
mm-hmm.
or the watching in which you are right next to the mover
mm-hmm.
and you dance with them, like if you're learning... traditional
mm-hmm.
dance of folk
mm-hmm.
dance or of
mm-hmm.
indigenous culture, or if you are on a dance floor, or even not in my generation, but say
mm-hmm.
my mom's generation, if you were going to the social dance, you would ask your friend to teach you the steps so that you could
mm-hmm.
have then the validation and the permission and the guise and the structure to approach the girl.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you didn't know, then you hadn't proven your investment or something.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that where you have to do so that you can watch
yes.
and be engaged.
Yes, yes.
And so I never questioned the effectiveness of that, because because then people get to think
mm-hmm.
through their movement. But
mm-hmm.
then I wonder about the sitting still
mm-hmm.
and watching the dance. I wonder about that.
I understand, yeah. But there is maybe also a kind of value of laziness. We don't move, but at the same time, I don't know. You know,
yeah,
it's interesting
yeah.
why people like to watch, you know, virtuoso dance and the people
yeah.
who really
yeah.
push themselves on the limits and do impossible things, and they just sit.
Yeah.
Nah? And I think there is something in a contradictory in human that we learn through laziness also, through our body being still. I don't know, it's kind of interesting. Nah?
Mm.
Or we don't learn, we are like almost observing the spectacle of the other, which we cannot do.
Mm.
So there is a kind of strange, bizarre enjoyment, nah? Which also is part of it. Nah? So this I'm really having a lot with the very virtuosic performances, no? Which are really using the dancers as almost like machines.
Mm.
No? And I am there and I have no virtuosity and I just sit and I just after the dinner and so on. So it's kind of...
Yeah, yeah.
I am actually enjoying in my laziness.
Yeah.
They're giving something... To me, I'm really in a voyeuristic position, and
yeah.
that's why I don't like these hyper virtuosic acts. I like dance or performances which are actually demanding something from me. Maybe I don't
yeah.
stand from my I don't stand up from
mm-hmm.
my chair,
mm-hmm.
but at least I have to be engaged with my mind, with my affection. I don't know. It's
but then you need the language to engage, not maybe spoken language or written language, but the ability to think
yes.
about things is
yeah.
not shouldn't be assumed.
Yeah, that's true.
Because this project mm. I want to do later this year about old blokes and
mm.
I think a huge thing going on is that they have never not that it has to be given, but like it has never been introduced to them the framework at which they can consider themselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's a generational thing.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. It was cultural, but you don't have to worry about that.
And
so now that they do, because culture's shifted and things like the divorces are happening and children mm-hmm. move out of home before they're married and they leave mm-hmm. the area, then you do have to consider yourself. But the structure for thought
mm-hmm.
was never mm-hmm. there. And so mm-hmm. I'm thinking about the structure, the training that you need to undertake to then have an experience that is not just these base ones of fear or laughter or sadness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And I don't think it's an interpretation back into words where you're like,
no, I understand.
Crying and then think, do they want this or do they want this? And you try and interpret mm-hmm. it, but there's.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's practiced.
Mm. But you know, we also have to take into consideration that if we talk about art and performances in that sense, then there is also this question of a form. Art is also very artificial. No? It's not just direct connection from life to the stage, but there is always through creation of a form or... I don't want to use your word language because it's not exact. It's really the form. Or you use the frame.
Yeah.
And this is also something what the audience enjoys a lot. No?
Yeah.
That there is a kind of invention.
Yeah.
Of a strange yes. sort. No? And in that sense, then dance is interesting because if it will be only coming from the live to the stage, then there is really the question, why do we watch that? No? So, but if you create a form with it and then becomes something not of that world, not of that life. It's a little bit divorced from it, and that's kind of enjoyment also. No? Like, I don't know, if you take Pina Bausch, by example, she has really very realistic things in the performance, like as she would took something from life to the stage.
Yeah.
But then it's done in such a form that it becomes very... alienated, that you start to enjoy in something what it becomes, and it becomes something else, no?
Yeah.
And that's are the things I think we are still enjoying in art, no? That art is an invention, is a possibility of human being to invent other forms of life, not just this one which are given, no? Yeah. That now it's a kind of romantic, but...
it's nice to have a romantic and positive relationship with something that you are going to invest all your time and energy in.
Yeah, it's important.
Yeah, because it's even this theory that love is completely chemical responses so that we take care of our young.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only reason it exists, but I will still engage with it at every opportunity. I remember the first time I was reading a book, maybe it was called At Home by Bill Bryson, or maybe it's one of his other books, but the first time I was introduced to this idea that the word artificial used to be a very positive word, and people would marvel at the artifice, and someone would walk into a steeple or a home.
Mm-hmm. Danke. Danke.
And be astounded and would remark about its artifice and take joy in it.
Maybe
we've gone too far.
Yeah, but I think it's kind of... I was also, when I was writing this book, I really was thinking in the last chapter, especially because I was thinking a lot about modes of affirmation. How do you affirm art today? Mm. That you say art is important...
Just and through how, money and through language.
But not, yes, but actually not through money. No? So what would you say if you would not use the language of economy, by example? Because they demand from you that you say, of course it's important, we have so much and so much audience, we did that and that and we did that and that and we earned so much money, so that's what you have. But what would be other argumentation that you would be challenged to say art is important? Why? Because, and then I was really introducing an idea of laziness. Yeah. Into it, because it's a kind of idea of contra-productivity and so on. And then I was also introducing a lot of ideas about the consumption, but the consumption without any reason. Because now we are really consuming, but actually we are always consuming with a reason, even if it looks totally irrational. So what would be that you actually spend without any, not consuming, spending, that you spend everything without any reason why do you spend it?
Your energy.
Because that's how art is. You spend a lot without any... You cannot say why actually you spend the energy when you were dancing for 1 hour. And this is something what I think it's quite interesting to develop other modes of affirmation and to challenge yourself to constantly affirm what you do. Because you will be constantly attacked. Your work is not valuable. You are a loser. You are not part of that society. You are eating the state money and so on. And I think that's something what it's very, very important for the artist today to be aware of it. But of course, it's a kind of thought experiment. How do you affirm something which is actually very non-affirmable at the same time?
But to yourself within your career, where you were talking about yesterday with... taking so many commissions that then, because you are paid and you are within an institution and then you are valid. And that if you do, like I had 4 or 5 last year and I'll have that many again this year. And in some respects, it's the perfect situation because you walk in and there's your money, there's your dancers, make me a show. But then it's like you say that where's the ongoing... Where is the ongoing, the investment and the trajectory? And soon enough, you will have a day where you think, why
is that? Yes, exactly. And I know that from the friends of mine who did their art for the whole their life, and now they're asking their questions: what is that? What do I do? Why? What? And it is coming from this exhaustion. Of the same, because you are caught in a system and you do the project and so on. And I have a friend who actually did in the last 2 years the best things, like what I saw from him, and he has constantly these questions. I cannot do it in this direction anymore. It's totally exhausting. Because I think it also comes a little bit with time when you are young and so on. Of course, it's normal. You are happy with all the possibilities you have. And that you can go there and there and there. But life also have different phases. And the market is demanding from us that we are constantly in the state of 20.
Yes.
It's like...
Do we want to buy as much? Do we want to give out as much?
Yes, exactly. But maybe there are also other modes. And I think this is a problem. And also it's actually strange because you stop to see the work of people under... after 30 anymore. There are no choreographers anymore, just the big stars. But actually on the festivals and so on, it's kind of and this is now very much also discussed in more in European context among the producers and so on, how to develop the modes which will bring continuation. So people are quite aware of that because there is no continuity anymore in the projects but the continuity, I think, you cannot have alone. That's the point. If you don't build the modes of support, it's very difficult. Then you have to be very special, there are artists who are in their own special world and they are living somewhere, I don't know, isolated in the nature or what, then they continue. But there are not so many, It's not... and then you need support, you need people around you for the continuity. With them you can experiment and build forms and so on, that's still...
Do you have any ideas about how to affirm art outside the language of economy?
Yes, I think we could, if we talk about... We should not talk... maybe we can affirm it with what economy is very... what for the economy is disturbing. Like that it's a kind of... That's why I was talking a lot about laziness. Like what would be the laziness as a category that we would affirm? Art. And I don't mean that artists are lazy, but they have a specific mode of productivity which is not always effective and it's not always bringing something at the end. So they have specific mode of productivity that you, I find this stone and I said, wow, this stone has a very specific shape. I will just glue it here and it will become an installation. Huh? And this is, now I'm just, huh?
Yeah.
But this is a kind of absurd operation which has nothing to do with economic operation. Purely aesthetic, formal operation. And I think in that sense, it's interesting. But of course, if somebody would watch this action from this person from the perspective of economic, he is really lazy. Now he just grabs what he founds here and does it. No? But there is an artist who did, a Croatian artist who was who did a manifesto on laziness in the beginning of the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a specific time because then he came from socialism to capitalism and then he was doing a kind of paradoxical manifesto. All the artists from the West they forgot what art is because they are not lazy anymore. So they are just thinking about galleries and, and mm-hmm. producing mm-hmm. and so on. And we, luckily, artists on the East are still lazy because we don't have any institutions, we don't have money, we can be lazy, we can afford that. And it's a kind of paradoxical manifesto, but it takes a lot about the freedom you also have when you are not caught in this network of operation and so on. It's a kind of...
Do you think then that everybody should do art? Because there's this thought that I have that in the same way that everybody used to, say, clean their own toilet, but now we have a lot of families and all businesses almost have somebody else to do that. Whereas it used to just be part of how you would run your business. You would do the books and clean your toilet. But is that happening the same with art, that everybody would have taken the rock and put it up on their mantelpiece and enjoyed it, and now everyone's far too busy for that? So they're paying us as service providers to bring some things into their life.
I don't know. That's kind of... Yeah, but art was in some way, in the relation to economy, always a service provider. Also, if you go... Actually, especially from Renaissance on, and Renaissance model of artists is actually bringing... In Renaissance, some theoreticians would say there is a start of capitalism, not in 19th century,
in the
Italian cities with merchants and with... And there was already a very particular function of artists in the way of the service of the state, no? Like Michelangelo or Leonardo da Vinci were the artists which were making a service, no? So that's not something new. What is new is this fetishization of the artist, subjectivity as a capitalistic creative subjectivity. I mean that what the artist does in society is not valued, but his subjectivity as a free creative person is the main subjectivity of a capitalist productivity. So you don't, you know, that's the paradox. Yeah, and this is something why we have so many difficulties, how to affirm our field. No?
Yeah, because we can only exist in the way that we do because of this thing that doesn't appreciate
our existence. Exactly, that's a kind of a balloon. No? And it's funny because you have immense values put on the value of the artist as a subject in how he's living in the city, how he's moving in the city, into what cafes he goes and so on. But he, at the same time, he's a parasite. No? Like in a kind of a social context, he's a parasite because he does not earn his own money. He's not thinking about the profit. He's poor. No? It's kind of strange. Yeah. So, and I don't know how this will go on because that's very, very funny. But there are big discussions now in Germany, for example, around Berlin, because Berlin was a typical example of the city where people, tourists can come because of the mode of living, not of the city. The city is not so interesting. No? And now there are so many tourists already there that this mode of living is disappearing and artists are really moving out because it's too expensive.
Where are they moving to?
They're moving to Leipzig, to smaller cities.
Where they can be lazy.
They can be lazy, they can live, they can have houses, there is much more expensive, they cannot get money and so on.
Yeah.
And of course, then there are some people who are saying, yeah, but what will the tourists now enjoy? You know, everybody is moving out. And I think it will become totally virtual. You know, like Venice. Like it's virtual art cafes, virtual lifestyle, bio.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of strange, no? So I don't know. It's
everyone will reminisce about the good old days when Berlin was.
Yeah. A kind of replica.
A performance city.
A performance city. A
performing
yeah.
what it,
yeah.
what it accidentally became.
Yeah. That's the point. Yeah.
Because of its lack of economic prosperity.
Yeah.
In Sydney, there's too much money that there's not enough abandoned buildings to that you can just live in or that you can perform in. Because there's enough money for people to develop all the time to make more money.
Mm.
And so everything becomes a timeshare. There's nothing that there's no asset that's left unmilked.
This is crazy. But when does it happen? Now in the last decade or so on
that it became so rich. I haven't lived there for that long.
That's really crazy.
But it's like you said, it's just ruthless. It's like a culture of ruthlessness. Yeah,
and it can collapse in a moment. Huh?
Yeah, that's the point. There's the skyscraper theory, where the more skyscrapers a city is building, and then it's right close to the edge of the bubble. Dubai and Abu Dhabi and Shanghai, all of these huge cities.
Yeah, it can collapse. Yeah, that's the. Unfortunately, we didn't learn a lot from the from the first or second Bors collapse. We will see how it will be. No? But that's the. I think and we should also be. I think this is also what we discussed also yesterday. This awareness how much art is entangled also with capitalist mode of production. It should be a little bit more present now.
Because we are people and we need. Food and housing.
Yeah, of course.
Maybe an hour is long enough.
That's good, huh?
It's we really did it. Good.
It was okay.
So interesting. Super. Thank you very much.
I could listen to it, no?
Of course.
Yeah, super. Great, great. Yeah.
Of course.
Oh, that's good. You have also others there, so I will check.
Mostly, it's like what you were talking about the other day. It really sparked me when you were talking about that the discussions that need to be being had and broadcast are the discussions between colleagues.
Because
I am only... Like, I'm not chasing down people who are at the top of anything at the moment. I'm only speaking with people who I'm working with and around and through, who I think are interesting. It's the only stipulation.
No, that's super. No, because that's also the way how you build and affirm the field. Otherwise, you are always chasing the people who are representing something. No?
Yeah, who represent the field.
And that's how the media are today working. Yeah. And it's totally boring. No? Another interview with the director of Sydney Biennale and then another one. Okay, good. So you go to work
with Miranda,
And then you just call me when I will know.
Okay, I think I saw Kat going over there.